has boosted the morale of the Iraqi resistance, and the Iraqi resistance forces have become more determined in order to counter the Zionist regime. This will not stop at this point. We know that the Iraqi resistance last night issued a statement giving an indirect message to the American forces. In case the U.S., in case of an attack by the U.S. against Iran, the Iraqi resistance will hit U.S. bases, and the U.S. is aware of the capabilities of Iraqi resistance forces. Since 2003 till today, the Iraqi resistance forces have dealt serious blows to American forces. So the U.S. will take this as a serious threat. Last night, simultaneous with the Islamic Republic of Iran's attacks, there was alarm sirens going on at the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. This is indicative of the American fear at the level, diplomatic level, and also the fear and panic in U.S. bases in Iraq. The Iraqi resistance is very serious in this regard, and the Iraqi resistance forces have the weaponry and the needed experience in order to hit and target U.S. bases. The U.S. will take this serious and will re-examine its calculations before taking any action against the Islamic Republic of Iran. The Iraqis consider themselves as the comrades of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And since the 7th of October, you see that they have carried out effective measures against the Zionist regime. And as admitted by the Zionists, these operations have been quite effective. They have almost disrupted the Eilat port. And we have a bright future for the Iraqi resistance because it's an inseparable part of the axis of resistance. And the Islamic Republic of Iran's missile attacks last night was the re-emphasis of the management and military and political support for the resistance axis. And in addition to this, it boosted the morale of the members of the resistance, from particularly the Iraqi resistance.
Very well. Thank you for that. We do appreciate it. That's Navid Behrouz, Press TV's correspondent there, talked to us from Baghdad. Thank you very much for that. In the meantime, we have had statements come from Iran's leader. We're waiting for some of it to accumulate before we relate some to you. Meeting a group of academic elites earlier on Wednesday, where he talked about how the demise of the Hezbollah leader has deeply saddened him, and he said that the root cause of regional problems, just like you see at the bottom of your screen there, is the presence of U.S. and Europeans who falsely claim about peace. Just some of the statements there coming from Iran's leader. We, as Navid Behrouz was speaking, there were celebrations that were happening in Tabriz, of which we brought to you, along with other really cities across the Islamic Republic and the world, for that matter. The social media post is evidence of that. At this point, we're going to take a quick break, and my colleague Barry Hornado will be back to continue the rolling coverage here on Press TV. Do stay with us for that. It's well bye for now.
Our lines roar in the dead of night. With every battle we stood upright, guided by faith, by pure insight. For justice burns with endless light. He led with honor, wisdom, grace, a shield for Lebanon's sacred place. No tyrant sword could slow his pace. In every heart we see his face. They thought they could silence the flame, but we rise again in Hassan's name. Our path is clear, we feel no shame. The soul of Hussein lives on the same. You fear his voice, but now you'll see a thousand.
what shall be your cruel intent? Your tyranny will fall to dust, will set worlds free. His death would make us weak, but in our hearts his strength we seek. With every tear the strong will speak, the dawn of freedom's what we peak. Hassan's blood runs through our veins, suffering through endless pains. The land you burn, the chains you claim, cannot destroy this righteous flame. They thought they could silence the flame, but we rise again in Hassan's name. Once more, our banner flies from shore to shore. In every heart, in every core, your reign will crumble, never soar. The blood you spill, the tears we shed, reignite the path ahead. For every martyr, every dead, the cause of justice shall be led.
No, we
didn't
say
you forgotten the man he swore, the Baker Yahusein forevermore. The path of truth, an endless shore. Stand and fight this war. The soul of Hassan will never fade. Your terror reign, a fleeting blade. For in his name we're unafraid. In death a thousand warriors made. The path of Hussein, it never dies. With Hassan gone, a new hero will rise. For every soul Hussein's way, there's no fear of death, no price to pay. You struck at one. Your end has begun.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. امشب نیروی هوافضای سپاه پاسداران با عملیات قهرمانانه و شجاعانه خود انتقام بسیاری از جنایت‌های رژیم صهیونیستی را گرفت. دو ماه گذشته دو ماه بسیار سختی برای ملت ایران، برای محور مقاومت بود. از هنگام ترور شهید هنیه، رئیس دفتر سیاسی جنبش حماس در تهران، با درخواست مکرر امریکایی‌ها، اروپایی‌ها و دیگران مبنی بر این که شما خیشتنداری کنید تا آتش بس رو در غزه برقرار کنیم، دوره سختی در خیشتنداری رو پشت سر گذاشتیم. اما رژیم جنایتکار صهیونیستی با حمایت امریکا و حتی چراغ سبز امریکایی‌ها.
This is Tehran, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Well, you've been listening to our live coverage of the momentous events in occupied Palestine and Lebanon. Just now, Iran's top military general, the chief of the general staff of the Iranian Armed Forces, Major General Mohammad Bagheri, is explaining what happened last night, where the IRGC, the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, fired literally dozens, hundreds of missiles at the occupied Palestinian territories in retaliation for three key assassinations of top Hamas, Hezbollah, and IRGC commanders. The chief of the general staff of the Iranian Armed Forces, Major General Mohammad Bagheri, said the Israeli aggression against Iran in July, which led to the martyrdom of Hamas's political bureau chief, Ismail Haniyeh, was avenged by Iran. He also said that the military operation was in retaliation for the assassination of Hezbollah leader Seyed Hassan Nasrallah and a top IRGC commander, General Abbas Nilforushan. He said, Major General Bagheri said, the operation True Promise 2 was carried out by the IRGC last night. He said, Israel assassinated Ismail Haniyeh, the former political chief of Hamas, and in a targeted killing operation in the Iranian capital, Tehran, on July 31st, on 31st of July. He said, after the aftermath of Haniyeh's assassination, Iran went through a tough period of self-restraint. He said, we had repeated requests by the Americans and the Europeans who told us to exercise self-restraint so that they could establish a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. However, the chief of the general staff of Iran's armed forces, Major General Bagheri, said the assassination of Hezbollah leader Seyed Hassan Nasrallah and the assassination of top Iranian general Abbas Nilforushan, the situation became completely intolerable, he said. He said Hezbollah leader and the top IRGC commander were assassinated in an Israeli airstrike in the southern suburbs of Beirut last Friday. Yesterday, Tuesday, Iran responded to this triple assassination, as well as the ongoing deadly aggression against Gaza and Lebanon. Iran launched hundreds, literally hundreds, of ballistic missiles towards the Israeli regime. He said, we targeted military and security installations within the occupied Palestinian territories. The chief of the armed forces of the chief of general staff of Iran's armed forces, Major General Bagheri, was at pains to explain that Iran did not target any civilians or civilian infrastructure in last night's missile attack. He said, we only targeted security and military installations. Major General Bagheri said the targets of the heroic operation that served as a response to many crimes which were earlier carried out by the Zionist regime included three of Israel's main air bases. Major General Bagheri named the base, the three air bases at the headquarters of the Mossad spy agency. He said this was a center of terrorism of the Israeli regime. He also named the Nevatim air base, which houses F-35 fighter jets, and the Hatzarim and the Hatzarim air base. He said this air base was used by the Israeli regime air force to assassinate the top Hezbollah commander Seyed Hassan Nasrallah. He said the targets of Iran's attack also featured the Israeli regime's strategic radar and a center housing Israel's tanks and personnel, armored personnel carriers, as well as a military center accommodating Israeli military forces that took part in the massacring of Palestinians in Gaza. So that was Major General Mohammad Bagheri, the chief of the general staff of Iran's armed forces. And he said that the operations carried out last night on Tuesday night were a decisive and measured response by Iran's IRGC to Israeli crimes and atrocities which have been carried out over the past several months. Okay, we go back to our live coverage of the events in occupied Palestine and Lebanon. Stay with us.
General Aziz Nasrallah, he made the remarks on Wednesday after Iran, as we mentioned, launched a barrage of long-range ballistic missiles towards the Israeli-occupied territories. We're going to be focusing more on that and other details regarding the anti-Israeli operation by Iran with our guest, Press TV Salman Kujri, who's joining us in our studio. Salman, it's great to have you with us. Talk to us more about the details that you have to share with regards to the operations that were carried out by Iran.
Well, Bardia, well, since early hours after the launch of a barrage of missiles, Iranian missiles, against the occupied lands, actually some 200 missiles of different types were actually launched against the occupied lands last night. And since the early hours, actually a kind of a mood of celebration and happiness swept across the country. I'm a reporter, I'm a journalist, a TV journalist for covering all these developments for over 16 years now. And I'm just reporting what I've seen over the past couple of hours. People on the streets are happy or joyous about what happened last night. Even those people who have differences of opinions with the government, Iranian government, still they're congratulating each other. And this is a true and this is a reality on the ground, that people are happy no matter what would be their, for example, thought about the government, about the politics, whatever. When it comes to unity, when it comes to Israel and what has done, has been done by Israel, has been committed all sorts of atrocities and crimes against the people of Gaza and also the people of Lebanon. In that point, all the Iranian people are very much united and are very much happy about what Iran did last night in launching a barrage of almost 200 missiles against the occupied lands, which almost, according to IRGC, over 90% of all the missiles launched hit their targets. And mainly, the main targets, as was numerously and repeatedly put, targeted three military bases, air bases of Israel, which actually the main attacks and invasions against Lebanon and also the Gaza Strip were from that point, started from that point. So all those main three air bases were mainly targeted by the barrage of missiles by Iran. But there, the one point is so important is that during last night's missile strikes against the occupied lands, Iran, for the first time, used its hypersonic missile called Fatah, which was unveiled back in 2023. And this was the first time that Iran's hypersonic missile was used in such a case. And you know that because of its high maneuverability and speed, it helps the missile not to be evaded by missile defense systems. And this has been made and produced and manufactured by Iranian specialists. So hypersonic, Fatah hypersonic ballistic missile is a homegrown missile actually made and manufactured by Iranian specialists, unveiled back in 2023. And because of its high maneuverability, it had high actually precision in hitting the targets. And also it can cover a distance of almost 1,400 kilometers. So that's a huge distance to be covered by a ballistic missile. Of course, this is a medium-range missile. So Iran has been very much progressive and developed, actually, in terms of missile devices and missile arsenals, better say. So in that case, Iran has been, according to experts, very much successful in hitting the targets using its homegrown, self-made, actually, ballistic missiles over the past couple of years. Now, let's move on to statements that Iranian officials have released over the past few hours. Top Iranian officials have hailed the country's retaliatory response to increasing Israeli aggression against the Islamic Republic and resistance groups in the region. Let's take a listen to the following report to find out about the Iranian officials' comments. Iranian Minister of Defense says that Brigadier General Aziz Nasirzadeh said that Tuesday's operation was only part of the Islamic Republic's missile capability. Nasirzadeh called the operation completely legitimate and in accordance with international law. He also warned of very severe actions with more advanced missiles if Israel responds and targets Iran and its interests. Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi, for his part, also echoed similar comments. He said the country exercised self-defense under Article 21 of the United Nations charter by targeting Israeli military sites. Araghchi added the Iranian response has concluded unless the regime decides to invite further retaliation. Iran's parliament speaker, Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf, for his part, meanwhile, stressed that the Islamic Republic of Iran only showed a fraction of its power to the aggressors. He added that Iran stands against Israel's warmongering with all its strength and based on the right of legitimate defense. Government spokeswoman Fatema Mohajerani hailed a retaliatory response as well. She said preserving honor and dignity is always one of the top priorities of the incumbent administration. Vice President for Strategic Affairs Mohammad Javad Zarif emphasized that Iran has the inherent right to defend itself against Israel's repeated armed attacks on Iranian soil and its citizens. He emphasized that Israel and its allies are responsible for all the consequences of this regime's continuous provocations and aggression. Chief Commander of the Iranian Army, Major General Abdulrahim Mousavi, said if the enemies make the slightest mistake, Iran may decide to destroy their infrastructures too. He added that Iran exercised self-restraint for a while, but realized that the regime does not change its ways and has to receive a definite response. And Iran's ambassador to the United Nations, Amir Saidi Iravani, said that the country will give a harsher response in case of further aggression by Israel. But before we go, Bardi, I would like to say that since last night, people held similar, many better say, gatherings in different cities. And today also in Tehran, also like other cities in Iran, people have got together, and definitely in during the evening hours, more and more of such gatherings will continue to be held by ordinary people who are there to celebrate what was done last night by Iran as part of the barrage of missile attacks against the occupied lands. Back to you, Barry.
All right, thanks, Salman. Let's also bring in political commentator Mohammed Obaid, who's joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Mr. Obaid, welcome to the program. Let's start off with your opinion or your perspective on Iran's Operation True Promise 2 that was carried out against the Israeli regime on Tuesday. Also, if you may talk to us about the failure for the Israelis, which can no longer boast their military superiority. That also goes for the U.S. as well, which could not fully protect Israel in this case.
Important and dramatic events yesterday and last night. What I'd like to shed light on is the fact that the Israelis, following the consecutive and successive operation carried out in Lebanon, culminating into the assassination of the great leader, Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah, they had a certain sort of euphoria, if you will. Even Netanyahu yesterday was talking about, he was talking about even changing the Middle East. But now you see them in a very, very different situation. The fact that all this euphoria is now gone, as you've mentioned, it turned out that they are no longer able to defend themselves. They have once again saw themselves as what they really are. The first time recently was on October 7th, and after that they tried to cover this up and tried to go on with massacring Palestinians and carrying out genocide against them in order to cover up this fact of weakness. The reality of the situation that they only live on American and other Western powers' support. They tried to screen the fact to killing Palestinians now through killing Lebanese. If you follow up the development and you see a particular rate of killing civilians. They do this deliberately in order to terrorize and intimidate the resistance and its milieu or environment, to as if telling the other peoples of the region, look what the price of the resistance would be if you follow up this line. So once again, it is the fact that they are extremely weak. They try to cover this with crimes and with other things that are as hideous and as horrible as killing civilians and innocent people. Now, the importance of the attack, or if well, the rightful retaliation, of course, in line with the international law for the crimes perpetrated by the Zionist regime, basically the assassination of late Palestinian Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh and the head of the political bureau of Hamas. So this, according to the international law, it is the right of the Islamic Republic to retaliate. Of course, the expression, time that went on for some, if you may call it, delay, was due to the fact of the understanding that the Israeli regime's plan, and basically Netanyahu's, was to drag the Islamic Republic and the United States into direct war. He wanted the United States to fight for to fight his war, and to have to have them go to war with the Islamic Republic of Iran. This was the case also with the Hezbollah and the Islamic resistance in Lebanon. They tried to several acts of provocation through the assassination of late Sayyid Shukr, and later the operation of the pagers and the walkie-talkies, and finally the assassination of the great leader Sayyid Nasrullah, as if they were pushing the Islamic resistance and Hezbollah to go into irrational and illogical retaliation that kill a lot of civilians, and that would kill a lot of civilians and consequently drag the United States into the conflict and once again have the United States fight the war for the Israelis. The wisdom of the Islamic Republic and the Islamic resistance did not play into Netanyahu's plan, but still at some time you have to retaliate, otherwise the enemy would go on and on with its aggressions and with its attacks and crimes against civilians. You see, in Lebanon, you have a very illogical number of civilian victims during 4 or 5 days of confrontations that you don't have in months of war. I mean, around 1,700 civilians are killed up till now, while we are within a week of the start of the Israeli aggression. So it was a needed measure by the Islamic Republic in order to put an end to this vanity of this Zionist regime, also to make them understand the limits to which they can go, and also it is something made to make the Americans understand that it is not acceptable that they keep on covering up the crimes perpetrated by the Zionist regime under the banner of self-defense. You know, up till now, the American administration, after the killing and the martyrdom of around 45,000 Palestinian civilians, they do not see any deliberate act of targeting civilians. So there are things that are extremely you may call them incredible in the international political arena, but still the world has got used to accepting these American lies and American propaganda, as for saying that Israel is a victim of its neighbors and Israel is only exercising its right to self-defense. And unfortunately, most of the world is buying these lies due to the intimidation acts carried out by the American administration against these countries, or through the threats that they make that if you go oppose our plans in the Middle East or somewhere else in West Asia, then you will be the target of our sanctions and economic measures that would just destroy your economies and so on. So, in brief, this was a very needed step that needed to be taken in order to abort all these Israeli plans. Many observers noted this Zionist regime's prime minister was bragging 2 days ago that he had plans to change the whole Middle East, and so following the Iranian attack, he had enhanced trembling, as many noticed yesterday. So, therefore, it was a very much needed act in order to put things in the right places.
Right. Also, we have some news coming from Yemen, as the Yemeni army earlier via its spokesperson Yahya Seri announced it had conducted fresh retaliatory operations against Israeli targets deep inside the occupied territories. Yahya Seri said the armed forces targeted a military site with several Quds 5 missiles. Yusuf Maudi, our correspondent in Sana'a, is joining us now to bring us up to speed on what the Yemeni army spokesperson Yahya Seri mentioned earlier. Yusuf?
Well, he mentioned the cruise missiles that were targeting Israeli military sites deep in the Israeli entity, and he also alluded to that this is in support of the Iranian attack and in support of the axis of resistance in general, and basically, letting Israel know that even if Iran has stopped its retaliatory attacks, that Yemen is still going to continue attacking with cruise missiles, ballistic missiles, hypersonic missiles, and obviously the operations targeting Israeli shipments in the Red Sea and the Arabian Sea, like we seen yesterday with the attacks of two ships, one oil tanker and another ship linked and affiliated to the Israeli regime. These attacks are going to continue, despite Iran's, if Iran decides to continue attack, despite if Israel decides to retaliate against Iran or not, because as far as Yemen is concerned, Yemen has declared an open war against Israel, and the only way to stop that war is by ending the genocide in Palestine and ending the deadly Israeli aggression in Lebanon. And I think what this Iranian attack has done is it sort of raised the morale of the axis of resistance. And, of course, the Yemeni people, I just came back from a protest that occurred an hour ago at the campus of Sana'a University, where students, men and women, they came out praising these latest attacks by Iran and calling for an escalation of military attacks from Yemen. Of course, Iran, when it comes to military power, it's one of the superpowers in the region. When Iran attacks, it delivers devastating blows, as the world witnessed yesterday. But this was a carefully calculated attack by Iran. The targets were not residential areas, and the attacks were specifically military sites, air bases, and these were the targets that Yemen launched the cruise missiles towards. And according to Yahya Seri, the spokesperson for the Yemeni armed forces, these attacks were successful. They hit their target, but there is censorship from the Israeli media. Israel, the Netanyahu cabinet, does not want the world to see the damage that has been caused from the Iranian attack and from the latest Ansar Allah Yemeni army attack that occurred in the early hours of the morning. We can expect that Yemen will continue these attacks. And according to Yahya Seri, wherever there's any Israeli interest or Western interest in the entire region, those are going to be a main target for Yemen, because diplomatic attempts and political attempts to try to resolve the conflict has not paid off for the axis of resistance. The more that the axis of resistance have been patient, the more that they have tried to bring an end to the genocide in peaceful ways, that only emboldened Israel to continue committing its genocide and even engage in political assassinations against leaders from the axis of resistance, of course, Ismail Haniyeh, and of course the martyred Ismail Haniyeh and the martyred Hassan Nasrallah. So I think going forward, Israel knows what's at store. They know what to expect from Iran, and they know what to expect from Yemen. And what's to be expected from Yemen is continuous attacks and a continuous siege, economic siege being imposed from Yemen against all Israeli shipments. And that has resulted in that has denigrated the Israeli economy. The owner of the port of Haifa, he mentioned that they have been hit economically in ways that they never expected because of these Ansarullah attacks targeting all of their shipments and preventing them from access to Bab al-Mandab and the Red Sea.
Youssef, Iran's missile strikes against Israel, they sparked celebrations across the region. We saw people in their numbers taking to the streets to express their support for Tehran's operation. What can you tell us about some of the reactions that you saw in Yemen following Operation True Promise 2?
Well, a lot of Yemenis, they viewed that Iran was being too lenient, that Iran was being, too restrained, was practicing too much patience when it comes to confronting the Israeli enemy. So it was, when the Yemeni people witnessed these attacks by Iran, it was basically, the message being sent from Iran to the Yemeni people is that Iran is in it for the long run and that they will stand side by side with the axis of resistance and they will be in this conflict, whether it's going to be a regional conflict, a World War III, whatever the price or challenges may be, Iran stands with the Muslim world. They stand with the, they're leading the axis of resistance, and they are prioritizing ending the genocide in Gaza and Palestine, which is a message that resonated with the Yemeni people and emboldened them to take to the streets in the early hours of the morning, across Yemen. And the protest that I was at an hour ago was a school campus, the Sana'a University school campus. That report will be available later today. But the message from the Yemeni students and the Yemeni protesters is a huge, huge praise to Iran and a thank you message from the Yemeni people to the Iranian armed forces for carrying out these attacks. And, there's expectations now. There's expectations from the Yemeni people. There's expectations from the entirety of the axis of resistance that if and when Israel decides to cross that line, Iran will be at the forefront of confronting the Israeli regime. And Yemen, Hamas in Palestine, and the Islamic resistance in Lebanon will also follow suit and will carry out attacks in ways that Israel never expected. And this is something that we see on a weekly base, where Yemen is targeting Israeli, on a daily base, actually. Yemen is targeting Israeli ships, which is resulting into the suffering of the Israeli economy. And this is very important because the air bases and the military sites that have been damaged or destroyed by Iran, Israel needs to rebuild. Israel needs to build the damaged military infrastructure. And the only way they can build is if they have the equipment. And if they, the only way to get equipment into occupied Palestine is through the shipping, the huge cargo vessels that will need to ship to Israel so that they can resupply equipment to build their destroyed infrastructure. So this is a calculated effort, a joint effort by the axis of resistance. As we know, the Yemeni army is in coordination with Iran. They're in coordination with the Islamic resistance fighters in Hamas and in Lebanon and in Syria. What we are expecting, though, in the near future, in addition to the missile attacks and drone attacks from Yemen, is perhaps a military front, a military ground invasion or an attempt to liberate the Golan Heights. The Golan Heights is one of the main corridors into occupied Palestine, and Yemen has intentions and is planning to play a major role in a military offensive to liberate the Golan Heights, which would then give pave the way for the access of resistance fighters to engage in a military ground invasion into deep into occupied Palestine. And that would really, really change the situation and balance the power in the region against Israel if the axis of resistance can put together a military front from the Golan Heights to confront the Israeli regime face-to-face and on the ground.
Youssef, also, we're seeing an increase in the support for the resistance front. We've been seeing that support ramping up and getting stronger, specifically following the assassination of Hezbollah leader Seyed Hassan Nasrallah. Talk to us more about how you see the support, the global support, specifically from people out on the streets for the resistance front, increasing as each day goes by now.
Well, you know, after the attacks yesterday from Iran, we've seen protests not just in nations loyal to the axis of resistance like Yemen, Syria, and Palestine, but actually, you know, people took to the streets in Saudi Arabia, and even in Jordan, and in Egypt, where they were, you know, they voiced celebration and voiced support for these attacks because they are part of the, you know, the Muslim masses are supporting the axis of resistance, whether their governments will tell you or not. The only one who's really not supporting the axis of resistance or Iran's military efforts are the puppet Arab regimes backed and financed and supported by the U.S. and Israel. For example, like in Jordan, where after the attack yesterday from Iran, the Jordanian king, King Abdullah, he went out of his way to make a statement that Jordan played a role in intercepting some of the missiles that were being launched from Iran. And, you know, that's why a lot of people, that's why Jordanians, they despise their rulers. They curse their rulers. They want nothing but to see their rulers burn and their throne burn to ashes and crumble because they believe these are traitors of the Muslim world and traitors of the Palestinian cause. And they would want nothing more than a revolution so that they can form a government that will join the axis of resistance and join the military efforts to liberate the land of Palestine. This is what it's all about. This is what we've come to, in, you know, in 2024 and going forward, 2025 and 26, all military efforts will be aimed at liberating the land of Palestine. And that's going to come through the use of brute military force being led by Iran, since Iran is the one of the strongest, you know, strongest countries in the region. And Yemen is continuing to advance militarily on a yearly base. You know, they've reached hypersonic missile capability, and they're looking to advance their hypersonic missiles. They're looking to add more targets to their attack list. One of the Ansarullah officials even mentioned that pretty soon Yemen is going to start targeting these satellites, satellites that are in the lower orbit, that are being used by Israel to spy on the Muslim world. They're being used by Israel to conduct assassinations and gather military intelligence so that they can use and leverage this information being collected from world, you know, from Israeli satellites, from Starlink, Elon Starlink, to wage war against the Muslim world. So one Ansarullah official has mentioned that these satellites are going to burn to the ground because they are being used by the enemy to wage attacks and to continue their international hegemonic neo-colonial domination of the Muslim world. So that's also something that's very interesting. If these satellites will no longer be available to Israel, you wonder how effective will their military intelligence gathering be once they lose their eyes and ears in the skies.
Thanks a lot, Youssef. Press TV's Youssef Maudi joining us from the Yemeni capital, Sana'a. We're now going to bring in broadcaster and commentator Fahima Mohammed, who's joining us from the British capital, London. Ms. Mohammed, welcome to the program. Let's focus on the recent Iranian operation, the anti-Israeli operation that was carried out on Tuesday. Share with us and our viewers your opinion on what these operations mean in collectively, True Promise 1 and 2. They will change some of the equations in West Asia. Experts are basically saying that the tide has turned. Do you see it in that light as well?
Well, I think the West has a very short-term memory, because the thing is, the way in which this promise was also come across was basically a pledge to make sure that, for example, Lebanon was not going to be sort of like invaded again by Israel. And ever since Israel came into existence, especially on the Zionist front in 1948, it's never really obliged by its own kind of sort of rulings, in the sense that it was come there as a guest, but not to take over, not to invade, not to occupy, not to be unjust to the people that are living there. And also people have suffered for decades. And in between where there have been wars and in between the ceasefires, so-calledly, there has been several attempts for Israel to, again, you know, go against, you know, international law and humanitarian causes, whereby they do not treat the Palestinians in an equal, sort of humane manner. And this is the only reason why Iran was the only, you know, sort of place in the Middle East that actually took a stance when it came into power in 1979 to make sure that there wasn't going to be any kind of normal establishment or kind of like, you know, sort of a ways in which they would actually associate with Israel, to make sure that they actually abide by what should be seen and what even the Western, you know, society deems to be moral. So a lot of things has happened. It's not just now, just like how when we just mentioned October the 7th, like as if to say it only started then and that was the beginning. Again, you know, Hezbollah, you know, fired rockets from 8th of October, like as if they started out of nowhere for no reason. And, you know, only Israel is allowed to defend themselves and retaliate and to also, you know, emerge in such a way that they have to also be, you know, the kind of victim. So even with the most, you know, powerful intelligence that Israel has, the most, you know, military backing with billions of dollars given in from their main superpower ally in the U.S., they still have failed where they wanted in the last year to capture Hamas as well as free the hostages. So that defeat is completely wrong. And they're now turning towards Lebanon because, you know, they themselves are suffering economically in Israel. It's not just the north of their borders, which they claim is the real reason why they are, you know, entering into Lebanon. Their whole economic system is collapsing across Israel, and people have fled way before then because they themselves have never been in a war this long. They've never endured any kind of distress, and they've even got plans for it, where even now with the last night's sort of like, you know, attacks, they basically had bunkers, they were safe, they had military support around them, they've got, you know, reservations for that. And, you know, the Palestinians or anyone else around the globe or in the region are not like that, but they do adapt and they do actually have the spirit as well to continue and live under really dire circumstances. But at the same time, it shouldn't be at the cost of Israel always saying that they are defending themselves, and at the same time, they are only there to protect themselves because they're the only people that are being attacked, and they are not actually doing any of the kind of like sort of, you know, hostile sort of attacks themselves, which is why this has happened in the first place. The whole reason, but people like to just pinpoint in between a conflict, in between, you know, those years and decades, and not actually understand what's going on. And then also in the West, the propaganda is, you know, because they have named and sort of like, you know, acknowledge that the fact that, you know, they want to label a particular group as a terrorist, which even Nelson Mandela was years ago. But again, he fought for a cause. And that just, you know, is another excuse for that, for them not even trying to understand or even, you know, have some sort of like acknowledgement as to there's a fairness in hearing both sides. If you listen to the Western media, it is absolutely one-sided. And again, you know, we have even the British Prime Minister standing up saying that he is, you know, a friend and is going to support Israel 100%. So Iran is the only country in the world, I could tell, for many decades, have actually tried as best they can, even if it wasn't initially there, to have military sort of conflict between them. But the political stance has always been that, you know, they call for, you know, Israel to conform to the fact that when they did come into existence and into the land, that they had to be respectful and abide by being fair to all sort of, you know, people that are there. But they've obviously come to overthrow. So it's the other way around. Already, even in the Netanyahu government, the Likud has actually said that they want to overthrow. Just recently, even in the Haaretz, you know, newspaper, they've said even in the last year, they have called out Channel 14 for calling for the complete eradication of the Palestinians. So are we all supposed to just sit and hold back and just say, no, we cannot react and retaliate? And, you know, Iran is just, you know, seen as Russia and China, and they're not allowed to have opinions. And also, you know, sort of, you know, rightfully, you know, condemn certain acts which even the West condemn themselves, but only because it's coming from a particular group that is not actually recognized. So again, you know, we see the hypocrisy and the double standards from the Western side of things, and they are a huge supporter for Israel, as we've seen. And no matter what they do and what they say, that's why Netanyahu is going to continue. So something has to be done. Something has to be, you know, made a stance. So for people that are actually happy about the fact that, you know, something has been done in response, it's not even an attack. It's a response to Israel's years and decades of, you know, the injustice that they have put upon everyday people around them. Then, you know, that is just a little bit of relief to say that we are here to sort of, you know, say no to the actual perpetrators, not actually condoning any deaths or any sort of hostilities that are out there. So people are also not getting it right. It's just in celebration to say that we are also standing up for ourselves. We also have a right to defend ourselves. We also have a right to stand up for what is justice and fair, as even the West see it. But it doesn't seem to apply to a certain group of people that are there that, you know, are not from the West, are not from a particular country and background and faith or, you know, wherever it may be. So, you know, all of that, you know, does filter down. There's a hierarchy as to how people are seen, how they are deemed, how they are from that, you know, sort of like biasness and prejudice that, again, we see these kind of state of affairs that are happening where their voices are not seen as fair and just only because they have been labeled and boxed in a group by the West, so that they can never do any right and they can never have any defense and they can never ever do anything that is there in line with the same sort of justice that we see for everyone, but it doesn't apply to the people coming from those regions and areas.
Ms. Mohammed, how do you view the hypocrisy of Western countries, namely the U.S.? They were quick to condemn Iran's retaliatory operations, where it's been stated that military installations and air bases were only targeted, not hospitals, not schools, not shelters like the Israeli regime. And on the other hand, just about every crime imaginable has been committed against civilians in Gaza for a full year now, and now civilians in Lebanon are also suffering. But there's been no condemnation for the Israelis over their genocidal rampage and their regional crimes, which are ongoing as we speak.
Well, like I just mentioned, I think, you know, that's why they very strategically label a particular group as terrorists. So they are not seen to be dealing in any kind of way where they will even recognize that, you know, international law or humanitarian sort of like, you know, morality is given to these people. Yet they're still humans and they still have to, you know, fight and also defend themselves against what Israel has been doing for many years. So again, because they have also invested heavily into Israel, and Israel is like a military base for them in the Middle East, very strategically, in a way, also geographically sort of situated and positioned, as your previous guest mentioned, where, you know, we've got the crossing of the Suez Canal, we've got, you know, the other end of it near Yemen as well. And that has been causing a lot of sort of like, you know, unrest for the U.S., to not have control over those regions. So Palestine, Gaza, in fact, is a perfect location for them to have their base and be in that way. So the reason why they will not actually condemn what they would normally for anyone else is because they do have a different agenda. And they have failed in that agenda so far, but they've actually, you know, eradicated and flattened, you know, most of Gaza, but at the same time, at the cost of the entire world now opening up to the fact that Israel is not necessarily going to be the one that is going to be sympathized over for this, nor is, you know, the billions of dollars that have been the taxpayers' money in the U.S., as we've seen the uproar and the outrage even from its own people, that have never even supported, you know, outside Israel, have now even turned their faces against Israel. So the hypocrisy will always stand because they have to stand by what they have invested in heavily. But at the same time, we have got their general elections coming up. And even though both parties are very, you know, heavily involved, even with, you know, Israel being their ally, but there has to be some major shifts in order for them to continue, and also for them to have that kind of political rank in their cabinet, in their kind of, next administration. And the minority vote, because the race is so close, does make a difference, like it did in the UK when it was recent as well. And we've seen certain governments appeasing, for example, the Muslim community, because they were turning away from the, you know, the usual people that they supported because of the Palestinian sort of, you know, conflicts that has been happening, the Middle Eastern conflict. So it's the same in the US. And because of that, Netanyahu may not be given the free rein as he is right now. So he is desperate to continue in this month before the November elections to also try and fulfill what he probably has promised in order for them to continue funding him. And no result has come of it. If anything, it's only, you know, drawing, you know, wider sort of regions and countries to get involved more deeper, especially now with Iran directly being involved, which was never, you know, in the last year. It might have, you know, supported in other ways, but not direct conflict, you know, to this extent anyways, especially the what we've seen last night. So at the same time, you know, no sort of new government or administration wants to take over if there's going to be an excessive war. And they're going to have to try and de-escalate that because, again, they have to listen to the people no matter what the policies and the sort of, you know, the heads and the diplomats and the politicians feel. They still have to do, and everyday people aren't protesting, not just in the West, not just around the globe, but more importantly, we're not concentrating and we're not seeing the protest that has happened in Israel. It happened even before, you know, October the 7th, very, very much so, where they were actually calling for a change of government. And then this happened with October the 7th, which kept Netanyahu safe. And he's continuing to keep himself safe. And his own people do not want him there. And he's got a warrant for his arrest or investigations for the way he's been performing in the last year. So he is absolutely desperate, and his country is falling apart. And the longer this continues, regardless of the military and the intelligence and all the funds, they are failing, and they are also weakening their own. Their own people even do not have the kind of sort of like cooperation like they did before. They never had so much sort of like, you know, division in their own sector as they ever had before. So this is something that, you know, if it continues, the spirit and you know, around the globe in the Middle East, especially with everyday people, will actually continue. Whereas with Israel, they've all fled and they all continue to flee. If anything, the only next thing that you know will be where, you know, the U.S. will have to send in their own troops to help Israel, because even their own Orthodox Jews have been fighting to say that we have never believed in war, we don't want war, and we're not going to fight for war, and they've been trying to impose it even on their own. So they do not have what they had before. Before, when they fought wars, whether it was in Syria or Egypt, they could do it themselves. Now it's heavily, heavily dependent upon, you know, the U.S., and up to a certain point, the U.S. will be there to stand by, because that's what they say. But behind closed doors, you could tell, or even their own people in their own country who even suffered torrential rain, and they were saying that they didn't have the funds, yet they were complaining that you could give millions and billions away outside, but not in the house that they're living in. So people are standing up, and people are going to want a change. And so Netanyahu cannot, you know, do what he does for very, very long. And if he does, he's going to drain his own country as well as his allies with him. And it's going to be a destruction, even if there was a ceasefire, even if there was a you know, some sort of defeat or win on either side, the actual country is already dissolving. And it's not going to resolve itself in any time soon. And those people are not resistant, and they're not spiritual, like the people of, you know, Lebanon or Yemen or Palestine or Iran. It's a different type of people that we're talking about. They will just disperse, and they will just fall apart, even spiritually, for them to not have that kind of, because they don't have a leader that they actually even want in the first place. So we will see how this unfolds next weeks and days.
So academic, broadcaster, investigative researcher David Miller is joining us now from Bristol. Mr. Miller, welcome to the program. Under Article 51 of the UN Charter, Iran had the right to carry out this operation in self-defense. That has been stressed by many Iranian officials and high-ranking diplomats. So this was a proper and justified response. Share with us your views on that as well.
Well, I mean, this is clearly an attempt by the Islamic Republic of Iran to inhibit the future activities of the Zionists. It's not just a question of response or revenge for the deaths of Ismail Haniyeh or of Nasrallah. It's also clearly an attempt to disrupt the possibility of a full-scale invasion of Lebanon and disrupt the possibility of the Zionists in responding. I mean, look at the places which were hit. Four separate Israeli Air Force bases, including the base in the Naqab Desert, Nevatim, where the F-35 fighter jets are stationed, two squadrons of those, which of course were the one was the place from which they took off to bomb Beirut. That's where the stealth fighters are, the F-35s, which cost altogether, if you tot up the perhaps 20 which have been destroyed on the ground, billions and billions of dollars. This is an attempt to stop the invasion of Lebanon, and it may well have a significant impact on the ability of the Zionists. In fact, it looks like it will have a very significant impact on the ability of the Zionists to continue to slaughter innocents and civilians, as well as, of course, resistance fighters from both the Palestinian resistance factions and indeed from Hezbollah in Lebanon. So this is an attempt to intervene in world events, which is, of course, defensive. And meets with the requirements of international law. All the targets have been military intelligence bases, in stark contrast to the targeting used by the Zionists. Let's remember their deliberate targeting of people living displaced in tents. Truly extraordinary. And the use of what are called bunker buster bombs in Beirut against civilian residential areas. So yeah, look, this is an indication of what the whole world should be doing in response to the Zionists' crimes and genocide. But it's only so far the Islamic Republic of Iran which has done this, and so the government of Iran can be very proud of that.
Back to Ms. Mohammed in London. Ms. Mohammed, Israel has been a menace to all the countries around it, like Lebanon, like Syria, where Israel constantly violates their sovereignty. Right now that we do not have Ms. Fahima Mohammed with us, we're going to continue with Mr. Miller in Bristol. Mr. Miller, I'm going to address a question to you. We've seen the destabilizing actions of the Israelis as they've been a menace to all countries in the region, like Lebanon, Syria, where they constantly violate their sovereignty and carry out illegal strikes on a regular basis. And, of course, with what's taken place over the past week with the murderous rampage in Lebanon that the Israelis have carried out. Following Operation True Promise, one, Iran said, quote-unquote, the era of Israeli hit and run is over. Do you think Iran has set a precedent, not once but twice now, where these countries also see that they can respond and will respond to Israeli attacks and their destabilizing actions?
Well, look, this, of course, also was an attack which was participated in by other forces of the Axis of Resistance. We know, of course, that Ansarallah have been involved, and also from the north, Hezbollah have been involved in really very major attacks on assembled Israel occupation forces, troops towards the border with Lebanon. So that this is an indication of the practical existence and the coordinating abilities of the Axis of Resistance, an actual military formation, transnational military formation, which of course is led by the Islamic Republic of Iran. So that is one thing. But the question of the wider involvement, I'm skeptical about the ability or the willingness of other countries to get involved. It's possible, I suppose, that Russia may at some point declare its hand. It has, of course, observation posts along the border with the occupied Golan Heights in Syria. But look, the what we face here is not just a precedent of the Islamic Republic of Iran showing that it can be done to respond to the aggression of the Zionist entity. But what we face here actually is an existential question. The Islamic Republic of Iran must know that the Israelis intend to obliterate Iran. They intend to invade Iran, and they intend to do that after they have launched very significant attacks on Iran, including, I would certainly imagine, with nuclear weapons.